Hey everyone, Jordan here from Barbell Medicine. Now, we'll get to the podcast here in just a moment, but I wanted to take a second to plug our Barbell Medicine Plus option in order to help support what we do here on the podcast and beyond. Now, if you hate these ads just as much as we do, you should know that Plus members get ad-free episodes, as well as early access to our podcast, written episode summaries, videos, exclusive training information, access to a members-only podcast where Dr. Baraki and I answer your questions directly, and more exclusive content as well. If you want to support what we're doing here and become a Barbell Medicine Plus member, head over to barbellmedicine.com/plus and sign up to be a Plus member today. That's barbellmedicine.com/plus to help us out and get rid of these ads for good. Thanks for your support. Let's head to the podcast.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
Welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Podcast, where we bring modern medicine to strength and conditioning and strength and conditioning to modern medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum, and this is another mystery case with the second most handsome doctor in North America, Dr. Austin Baraki. What's going on, man?
Hey, doing all right. Feeling pretty good today. Got some training in this morning and get to do my next favorite thing.
Do some medicine? Yeah, well, yeah, famous last words, because this is, I am the most confident that unless you've actually read this case report before.
Okay.
No chance.
Looks like I'm going to learn something today.
Even better. I ran this by the head of our pain and rehab team, Dr. Derek Miles, as well. And he goes, the only reason I know the diagnosis here is because I've read this exact case report, which makes me feel good about my knowledge of medical literature. So yeah, that's my prediction. If this is the first Barbell Medicine podcast that you've tuned into, hey, welcome. What we do here on these mystery cases is I take a real case report, so something that really happened in a hospital or a clinic somewhere, and I present the information piece by piece to Dr. Baraki. It's kind of like you're watching an episode of House, and he gets a little bit of the information, a little bit of the information, a little bit of the information, and then is able to arrive at a diagnosis with less sort of narcissism.
Yeah, and, minus the sociopathy. Yeah, okay.
As far as we can tell. So I've linked the actual case in the show notes so you can review this. Real medical case, real information. And if you want to play along at home, I will prompt you to pause the podcast to come up with some sort of your own medical differential diagnosis. Basically just means, hey, what could this possibly be and why? So with all that prelude out of the way, Dr. Baraki, are you ready for this?
Let's give it a shot.
Here we go. 26-year-old male presents to the emergency department with 3 days of progressively worsening left hip pain. 3 days ago, the patient says he woke up like this and his left hip was very painful upon getting out of bed. He reports that he could walk normally somewhat at the time, but with pain. And since then, it's become progressively more painful with movement, especially with loaded movement. He says that the pain is constant and deep feeling, but doesn't radiate anywhere. It's located mostly in the hip and the anterior thigh. He started limping very badly earlier today and decided to come to the emergency department because he's worried. He denies any recent trauma or issues with the hip, but he has had an episode like this before. About a year ago, he had left hip pain with decreased range of motion. He says he thinks that he got an MRI that didn't show anything, and ultimately they had to take him to the operating room for a diagnostic arthroscopic procedure. That's as far as he remembers, and that they removed some of the joint tissue. He's been fine ever since until now. He denies any low back pain, any fever, no nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, or recent illnesses. He has no other medical history. So before we go any further, this is the time to press pause on your player so you can come up with some sort of ideas of not only what's going on, but also maybe organize your thoughts about who this patient is. Now, if you're not pressing pause, I'll turn this over to Dr. Baraki. Do you want to summarize the patient and kind of give us your initial sort of rundown of what's going on?
Yeah, perfect. This will be a good one, I think. So a 26-year-old guy, we don't have any past medical history. So for now, we're going to assume that he is healthy and has a competent immune system. And he is coming in with what I'm going to call acute left hip pain, which I summarize even further as calling it monoarticular joint pain, meaning one joint that is hurting. And then the other key kind of aspect here that jumps out at me is that this is recurrent, meaning he's had an episode like this before. So I'm going to say this 26-year-old guy coming in with recurrent acute monoarticular arthritis is kind of going to be the way that I summarize this into doctor lingo, but that is actually a helpful way to then launch into a differential diagnosis when you provide the appropriate framing kind of for it up front. It's also non-traumatic. That was the other feature that I would add in to that kind of summary statement. So where do I start with this kind of thing? Of course, once we set trauma aside, the next kind of no-miss diagnoses that we think about for a single joint that is hurting suddenly are things related to infection in the joint, things that are related to what we call crystalline diseases, crystalline arthropathies, things like gout and pseudogout that can kind of precipitate crystals in a joint and can lead to sudden pain, and then blood, so like hemarthrosis, which can happen due to people who have bleeding disorders and things like that, even in the absence of trauma. So those would be the first things that I'd be thinking about. Is there any evidence on either examination, laboratory studies, or imaging tests of, for example, fluid in the joint that would benefit from sticking a needle in it, pulling some of that fluid out, looking for evidence of infection, inflammation, blood, pus, crystals would be the kind of the first few steps that I think about. The other things, you know, to think about if it were an infection would be, why would this individual have an infection? And if they did, how did it get there? That again raises questions about this patient's immune status. Do they have immune deficiency leading them to be susceptible to certain infections? Do they have certain sexual behaviors that predispose them to sexually transmitted infections that can get into joints, things like gonococcal arthritis? Or do they have not immune deficiency, but kind of an overactive immune system leading to autoimmune kind of attack on the joints, which is something that can lead to recurrent joint symptoms over time. The crystalline diseases can happen over and over again over time without seeming, you know, obvious provocation. The blood would be another, again, hypothesis that we could determine by further evaluation and pulling some of the fluid out. It was helpful for you to say that he currently doesn't have, you know, any other symptoms or anything else systemically that we can identify, and he had no recent illnesses. Sometimes you can get kind of post-infectious arthritis and things like that, although that's more often going to affect multiple joints instead of just a single joint like this. The last thing I'll mention, aside from infection, inflammation, crystal and blood, things like that, that is a little bit more unique to the hips, since you have a streak of at least bringing up or making relevant sickle cell disease a few times in the past, something called avascular necrosis, which is something that can happen in sickle cell disease, but can happen in other conditions as well, where basically there becomes a disruption or an interruption of the blood supply to the hip, and that joint in particular can be susceptible to effectively dying, and that can be pretty painful. So those are a few initial thoughts and where I would go next.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, hey, welcome back. If you just press and play, Dr. Baraki just took us through an excellent differential diagnosis. And again, I keep repeating this, but your differential diagnosis just has to be long enough to include the correct diagnosis. that's the takeaway from most of medical training. All right. Well, let's get into like some physical exam and some laboratory studies and some imaging and see if we can't make this picture a little bit clearer. So you saw the patient in the emergency department, and while he did appear to be in pain, he otherwise appeared well, well-groomed, well-nourished, etc. He's alert, oriented, and able to participate in the exam. So you performed a focused musculoskeletal exam of the lower extremities, pretending you're an orthopedic surgery resident instead of an internal medicine doctor. So both limbs are warm and well-perfused. The skin is intact with no lacerations, wounds, or palpable masses. The left hip joint appeared swollen compared to the right and was tender to the touch over the anterior hip joint. Range of motion was limited in all directions due to pain. In fact, it was sitting in the external rotated position when you noticed him sitting there in bed. Strength is diminished to 4 out of 5 on hip flexion and extension on the left side compared with the right side. He has pain with active sort of muscular contraction, normal on the right side. He has no swelling in the thigh or knee. His knee extension and flexion is 5 out of 5 bilaterally. Distal pulses are normal and intact for the lower extremities. He has no tenderness over the pubic symphysis. His lumbar spine range of motion is normal. No pain in the lower back. His gait was assessed, showed that he did have the ability to bear weight, although with pain, and the patient walked with a limp with diminished left hip range of motion, but no foot drop. So that's the extent of the physical exam. Let's get into some vital signs, labs, and imaging. Vital signs, fortunately, were within normal limits. He's afebrile, no tachycardia. He's breathing well on room air. His CBC, so complete blood count, was significant for a white count to 14.2, but otherwise normal hemoglobin and hematocrit. His ESR, so erythrocyte sedimentation rate, was 2, which is normal. His CRP, C-reactive protein, was 5.1, which is normal-ish. We usually think if it's below 10, tend not to get too excited about that, although that can change. And his chemistry, blood chemistry, was also normal. So now with some imaging, and this is the final bit of information I'll provide to you before I ask you for your thoughts on this particular patient. Had an X-ray of his lower extremities that showed no fractures or abnormal masses. An MRI was also performed of his left hip that showed a moderate effusion in the left hip and large synovial proliferation with frond-like projections. And just for the listeners at home, and maybe for you, Dr. Baraki, I don't know how much of a botanist you are, but a frond is a long, thin compound leaf with many fine divisions, such as those found on ferns and palm trees. So that's what it looked like. And doctors, particularly radiologists and people who and anatomists who describe these sort of findings, they're really good at likening the structure to something else. But Dr. Baraki, with this new information, how do you think about this patient?
Yeah, interesting. So the exam just showed us that his hip hurts. There wasn't really a ton else that was positive on the exam, a lot of kind of normal findings on the exam or things that would be expected due to hip pain. It is in some ways reassuring, of course, that he could bear weight on the joint, that it wasn't like completely dislocated or fractured. We would suspect that based on that examination. His pulses are okay. And other things that, you know, I should remind myself and the audience that when somebody says they have hip pain, it is, you should not prematurely assume that it is a problem with the hip joint. It could be due to the hip joint, but also what we call the periarticular structures, or the structures around the hip joint, the muscles, the tendons, the blood vessels, and then referred symptoms from the back, and the femur and things like that. Those, and even the groin can all lead to pain in that region. And so that would be other things to consider. And fortunately, the evaluation of most of those things looked okay on this exam. So based on these labs then, the white blood cell count being 14,000, that is a bit elevated. As I've talked about before, it's a moderately helpful test. It is more useful when it is elevated to reflect the possibility of inflammation going on. It is less useful when it is normal to, you know, rule anything out. And then the inflammatory markers, the ESR and the C-reactive protein, interesting, but I think they're kind of overrated tests in general in medicine. The ESR is a test that can become elevated with inflammation, with some caveats. It tends to take longer to become elevated, so it's more of a chronic slow increase and slow decrease as inflammation fluctuates. And then there's a lot of other factors that can falsely elevate or falsely suppress your ESR, like anemia and a bunch of other things, for example. So that's a kind of a bit of a fraught test that is not super awesome. The C-reactive protein, I would say, is a bit more useful. It is more reflective of short-term inflammation, although similarly, there are various kind of confounding things that can screw with that, for example. So like patients with lupus, classically their condition, the inflammation that they have tends to actually suppress CRP. So they can have raging inflammation and a suppressed CRP that tricks you into thinking they don't have inflammation going on if you don't recognize that pattern. The rest of the chemistry, I wasn't really expecting much to be going on there. And then this imaging. So the imaging shows, well, the X-ray is great. He didn't have a fracture. I wasn't really suspecting that he had a spontaneous fracture. That can happen if somebody, say, they have osteoporosis, or if they have a bone tumor that leads it to be pathologically weakened. You know, younger, he's in his 20s. He's starting to push the age range where we start to see, you know, bony cancers. Those are more often seen in pediatric patients. But if you had a tumor and then that fractured, that'd be a way to get there. But we've ruled that out at this point. Now, the MRI is kind of, I think, where the money is in this case. It shows a moderate effusion. And effusion is just a collection of fluid in the synovial space, in the joint space. And so that is pretty much, we're going to have to sample some of that. That would be a first step kind of thing to get to the bottom of this. You have a patient with acute hip pain, an elevated white count, even if he didn't have an elevated white count, and a new effusion around a joint. That's got to come out to make sure there's not pus, bacteria, crystals, blood going on in that joint. Those would be the first things that I'd want to know. And then if it's none of those things, maybe it's more sterile inflammatory fluid. Now, he has this area of large synovial proliferation, fronds. This is stuff that is probably like diagnostic. It may well be diagnostic of a particular, you know, orthopedic musculoskeletal synovial type condition. There's not a condition that I immediately associate with that description outside of he's got proliferation of the synovium, which is kind of like the lining of the joint space that seems to be associated with some inflammation, as evidenced by not only his symptoms, pain, swelling, tenderness, elevated white blood cell count, but also the appearance on this MRI scan. So I'm going to say maybe he has some synovitis. And so that is itself a symptom or a sign that then has its own differential diagnosis. We see synovitis in a lot of rheumatologic or autoimmune conditions. Infections in the joint will obviously lead to inflammation of the synovium and subsequent accumulation of fluid in the joint. And so at this point, I'm concerned with some sort of most likely either inflammatory process going on in the joint. I think it's actually maybe a little bit less likely to be infectious. And the thing that's pulling me away from the possibility that it is infectious a bit is that it is recurrent, meaning he had this in the past and there was like seemingly nothing found. They went in, they probably did a washout or something, cultured the fluid, I would hope, and they didn't find evidence of an infection. Still possible, but maybe a little bit less likely. Whereas inflammatory autoimmune type conditions, they classically will tend to relapse and remit, recur, and go into kind of quiescence over time. That's a somewhat common phenomenon in autoimmune conditions. And then moving on from that, other causes of inflammation like this, cancers can do this. Now, again, cancers like some kind of a primary synovial cancer, some kind of a sarcoma, something like that. This is getting into a little bit of esoteria here and is not fundamentally not possible to diagnose without sampling tissue or fluid and getting and looking at it under the microscope. And so that's kind of the layout. My first line, like I must rule this out now, is going to be some kind of infection, even if I don't think it's the most likely thing. And then from there, looking for evidence of those other inflammatory causes of fluid accumulation. And then potentially, if he goes to the OR, taking a biopsy of this synovial proliferation and looking at that under the microscope to see, is this, you know, some kind of weird infectious proliferation? Is this malignancy, or is this kind of like what we call panis that can develop in these territories relating to autoimmunity or autoinflammatory diseases?
Yeah, no, that's good. And we'll skip over the anatomical esoteria for the moment. Maybe we'll come back to that.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum, founder of Barbell Medicine. And over the last 10 plus years in business, we've built a team of amazing professionals that includes physicians, physical therapists, dietitians, and strength coaches that are available to help you reach your goals. Whether it's strength and muscle gain, weight management, or recovering from an injury, we have some of the best coaches in the game and have worked with people from all walks of life. From teens to grandparents and beginners to elite level athletes, our experienced team of professionals work together to meet you where you're at and give you what you need to succeed. That's the Barbell Medicine difference. If you're not sure exactly what you need, take the quiz linked in the description below or send us an email, support@barbellmedicine.com, and we'll get you sorted. From all of us here at Barbell Medicine, we look forward to hearing from you. We'd love to help. This podcast is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. 2025 is here, which probably means you're reflecting on what you hope to achieve and perhaps even considering some New Year's resolutions. Learning a new language in 2025 with Rosetta Stone is a great goal, which comes with the added benefits of exploring new cultures, connecting more deeply with others, and oh, by the way, it's 50% off for life. Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program for the last 30 years, with millions of users in 25 languages offered. It's also available on desktop or as an app so you can learn anytime, anywhere, and it uses an immersive experience to help you learn the language of your choice quickly, along with the correct accent using its true accent speech recognition technology. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. And did I mention it's 50% off for life? Start the new year off with a resolution you can reach. There's no better time than right now to get started, and Barbell Medicine listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Head over to rosettastone.com/today and get 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Again, it's 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. This podcast is sponsored by Incogni. Anyone who's been on the internet knows that online privacy and data protection is a big problem. Every year, both the number and severity of personal data compromise goes up, and according to the 2022 Annual Data Breach Report by Identity Theft Resource Center, the number of victims has gone up by nearly 41.5% from 2021. In the U.S. in particular, there's a big problem where people search individual websites to create detailed personal profiles on millions of Americans and publish them online for anyone to see. The bad news is that your personal information is probably being sold or published online without you even knowing it. The good news is you have the right to protect your privacy and request that data brokers delete the information that they hold about you. Let Incogni do the work for you. Incogni reaches out to data brokers on your behalf, requests your personal data removal, and deals with any objections from their side. It's easy to sign up, and once you do, the entire process is automated. Incogni also keeps you updated about the progress.
They're also offering Barbell Medicine listeners a promotional rate to get started. Use promo code Barbell at the link incogni.com/barbell to get an exclusive 60% off an annual plan. That's incogni.com/barbell to get 60% off your annual plan to protect your privacy. Go incognito with Incogni.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. Some of y'all might have heard I made the cross-country move from LA to New York last year, and Wayfair has definitely helped me create the feeling of home wherever I am. I love a cozy couch and a comfy living room that feels like our little sanctuary for our family. And I love vases, I love candles, I love anything that kind of makes you feel at home and peaceful. Anyway, something about me is I love options when it comes to making my home more me. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. Everyone loves a good deal. I mean, who does not want free and fast and easy delivery? Come on. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you. Wayfair, every style, every home.
So they actually did take a sample. You took a sample because you're an enterprising physician and a little bit of a cowboy. So you went and sampled the synovial fluid. And so when it came out, it looked bloody. It was brown and red. The when you sent it off for analysis, there were 20,000 white blood cells, mostly macrophages, that had a high concentration of hemosiderin, which is a partially digested ferritin, which is a protein that carries iron in the body. So those were found in these macrophages. There's lots of red blood cells also in the analysis, and the Gram stain was negative for bacteria. And you also called Ortho because, again, while you're a cowboy, you're also responsible. So you called Ortho and they said, look, we got to take this guy to the OR. We need to go in there. And if nothing else, just wash it out. We need to take a piece of tissue too. So let's do this diagnostic sort of arthroscopic investigation. They call you from the operating room and say, hey, Dr. Baraki, the joint capsule is thickened and inflamed. We sent cultures of a biopsy from one of these frond-like projections that we're looking at, and we sent it to pathology. Check the report and we'll call you when we're done. So the path report showed that the tissue had a number of multinucleated giant cells that looked like osteoclasts, which are specialized cells in the bone that are involved in breaking down bone for remodeling and resorption. A number of the macrophages also had hemosiderin that was noted. And so now, Dr. Baraki, and if you're listening at home, this is time to press pause. You must come up with a diagnosis before the orthos beat you to it. All right, so that's all the information that you get, and we're going to see if you can come up with the correct diagnosis.
Yeah, so this does not immediately jump out to me as something that I recognize. So this is whatever this is relatively uncommon. Now, what I can say is that when the patient had his joint fluid removed and it was clearly very bloody, we're going to call that a hemarthrosis. And that is basically bleeding into the joint space. And that is most often going to be something that is traumatic. It can happen spontaneously. And in this case, we had a case of seemingly spontaneous hemarthrosis. And that raises suspicion first and foremost, especially in a young person like this, in which who has had an episode like this before, of some kind of bleeding disorder. And so that's one thing that you didn't give me any lab studies relating to his coagulation cascade, for example, like his prothrombin time, PTT, and his INR and things like that.
If they ran a complete analysis and a smear or whatever, you would not find any abnormalities.
Cool. Okay, great. So that is useful to rule out many potential bleeding disorders like hemophilia and things like that that can lead to spontaneous hemarthrosis. It is that still does raise the question of like why and how did that blood get there? And so if I were presented with this case, I'd say, okay, I'm sufficiently reassured at least that the really bad, dangerous, potentially life-threatening things in the short term, like a joint space infection, have been, you know, reasonably excluded. We have not seen evidence of any crystals in the joint to say this is a very bizarre case of gout in a 26-year-old or pseudo-gout affecting the hip in this 26-year-old, but we do have blood. And so making sure that I'm excluding all of the potential primary bleeding disorders that can lead to this, the next question is, what is the significance of these multinucleated giant cells that look like osteoclasts in the joint space? The fact that there are macrophages in there containing hemosiderin, that may be relevant to the ultimate diagnosis, or it may just be that they were there and there's blood around and they chewed it up. So I think he may well have some kind of primary synovial disease going on, and the nature of that synovial disease leads to this recurrent bouts of inflammation and bleeding into the joint space. And so ultimately I would be taking what are clearly the most salient features of this case, like recurrent, presumed recurrent hemarthrosis, as well as synovial proliferation / synovitis and multinucleated giant cell kind of development, and punching those in and searching as a non-expert. If I had a consultant assistance in this, then they might be able to immediately recognize this syndrome. But otherwise, I'd be searching for this. But I'm suspicious for some kind of an inflammatory synovial disease that is leading to recurrent bouts of hemarthrosis and monoarticular arthritis. And that is probably about as far as I can get, unless you want to give me some time to do some Googling, but otherwise you can educate me.
I think that if you were given the opportunity to Google, I have not locked your computer where you cannot, go other places. So respect for playing the game honorably. You would have found the diagnosis and then you would have been like, what the heck is that? That's a handful of things. So the pathology identified the tissue as being consistent with pigmented villonodular synovitis, which is also known as tenosynovial giant cell tumor, TGCT. And in surgery, the remaining synovium, which is specialized connective tissue lining the joint capsule, was removed. Postoperatively, pain resolved and his range of motion returned to normal. At 1 year, the patient was asymptomatic with a normal physical exam. So we're going to talk about some weird stuff, but I'm going to give you half credit. I you got synovitis, you realized it wasn't infectious, and then you said a primary sort of thing, and this is in fact a primary proliferation of synovial tissue. So
yeah, I think I got as close as was humanly possible without already knowing what this diagnosis was.
Now I will tell you, if I gave you the actual synovial analysis from the case report, there is a 100% chance you would have been led to believe this is septic arthritis.
Interesting.
Because the white blood cell count was over 50,000. Fluid was yellow. Now the Gram stain was negative, but it was most of the white blood cells were neutrophils. So 93% neutrophils. And so at that point you'd have been like septic arthritis.
I would have already had this patient on vancomycin and ceftriaxone while we got to the bottom of this.
So when I was reading the case report, and for the listeners at home, if you're like, look, this is all way too jargony, whatever, all of those things suggest infection outside of having a sort of normal or negative stain for bacteria, although that only happens about 1/3 of the time in septic arthritis anyway. So if you're like, look, you got a bunch of white blood cells, the fluid doesn't look bloody. And also most of these white blood cells are neutrophils. That's like the cavalry being called for an infection. You're like, it's septic arthritis. There's an infection in here until proven otherwise. And so I'm actually surprised that outside of the biopsy that they took in the OR that showed what this was, if you just saw that synovial fluid analysis, you'd be like, shoot, it's septic arthritis for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just putting that patient on antibiotics up front would be the correct thing to do regardless. And that's also one of the things that probably pushed them to take this patient to the OR as quickly as they did. Because a lot of patients might have fluid in a joint and they don't get whisked off to surgery unless there's sufficient suspicion for something like that, because that's a life-threatening diagnosis. So
yeah, in fact, that's what they did. Patient. Yeah, so let's talk about what is pigmented villonodular synovitis. So this pigmented villonodular synovitis, PVNS, or giant cell tumor, the tenosynovial giant cell tumor, it's rare. It's a proliferative local tumor of synovial tissue. It does not metastasize, so it's just localized, but to this synovial tissue. There's about 9.2 cases per million persons per year, most commonly affecting individuals age 30 to 40. The cause is unknown. There's some thought that there's a genetic change associated with the condition, with a translocation of a particular gene involved in colony-stimulating factor 1 receptor. And so this forces that CSF1 receptor to be produced at high levels, which increases cell production that causes synovial tissue hyperplasia and growth, which constitutes the tumor mass. It almost always affects a single joint. The knee is the most common at 80%. Other sites are less common, but the hip is usually second. And it presents with pain, swelling, symptoms of arthritis, spontaneous bleeding, like that hemarthrosis into the joint. Initial imaging tends to involve plain x-rays, which typically reveal some bone erosion, because the bone is kind of being inflamed and eaten away by this mass. An MRI, though, is typically key to sort of establishing the correct diagnosis. It shows these synovial proliferations, although frond-like projections, I couldn't find anything that said like, oh, this is like the characteristic, this is the board's question, so to speak. This bloody effusion, atraumatic hemarthrosis is typical. In folks that are treatment naive, so they've never seen this before, the principal treatment is resection through surgery. Whether you do a sort of localized sort of resection, so just where the affected area is, or a total synovectomy, depends on the extent of the disease. And yeah, as you mentioned, these things do recur quite often. 30 to 50% is the recurrence rate on average for this, despite complete synovectomy. So if somebody has a recurrence, they can do further resection, they can do joint replacement, or even amputation in some cases.
Well, I guess the other thing, you know, if you mentioned that it's suspected that there's some kind of genetic, you know, predisposition or genetic risk factor for this, say you resect the primary tumor that the patient has, they still have the same genes in all of the other synoviums of all the other joints of their body. And so it makes sense that it could, you know, recur in any of the other joints someplace else too.
Yeah, so there's some additional treatments. The radiation is kind of controversial at the time because of the risks of radiation treatment. And there are also medications directed directly against CSF1 receptors. So there's a handful of those, which again, ortho would be heavily involved in that. And then maybe onc. I actually don't
ortho,
know.
If it would be ortho-onc. It would be ortho-onc specifically. General orthos would not be.
No, yeah, generally not. But the interesting thing is, and again, I mentioned this earlier with the synovial fluid analysis, you'd be thinking septic arthritis, you know, 9 out of 10 times. And so contrasting this against septic arthritis of the hip. So this septic arthritis is inflammation of the hip due to infection, secondary to infection. And yeah, you get pain, but you get fevers about 60% of the time, which this patient did not have. They tend to appear sick. There is swelling like this patient had, redness, the joint is tender and warm all the same, but this patient didn't have a fever. Although again, maybe not all the time.
Yeah.
It's most common in the knee for septic arthritis, greater than 50% of cases. And in young, healthy, otherwise healthy, sexually active adolescents and young adults, 20% of the time it's gonorrhea, Neisseria gonorrhea, as you mentioned, the gonococcal infection. The synovial fluid analysis is really the difference here. So when they take a sample of the fluid, it's typically yellow, has a high white or cloudy. It has a high white count. So white blood cells are usually greater than 50,000. That tends to suggest infection. They're mostly neutrophils, which again, that's the cavalry of the immune system being called to the scene. That suggests infection. And it only grows bacteria about a third of the time. So if you were looking for that as your slam dunk, I suppose if you got it, you'd be like, oh, well, yeah, this is for sure septic arthritis. But if you didn't, not necessarily. And you probably would also expect a higher ESR and CRP in the setting of septic arthritis. Again, not all the time, but just generally speaking. This is treated with surgical irrigation, debridement plus antibiotics. So this patient actually was placed on antibiotics because the real synovial fluid analysis suggested septic arthritis. But I thought, okay, if I already don't think he's going to get this, there's a 0% chance you would have gotten it if I gave you the real synovial analysis.
I mean, I think you could have given it to me and I would have said, well, I'm going to start this patient on antibiotics as they did correctly. But what doesn't fit for septic arthritis in this case? Because there are some features that don't fit. And one is that MRI finding of all this like crazy synovial proliferation. You don't expect that. And then the other is, again, if there is an infection in the joint space, you have to explain how did it get there. If there was no instrumentation of his joint, nobody tried to give him a joint injection for hip pain and then introduced an infection that way, then the only other way it happens is from bloodstream infection, blood dissemination, right? And so then it's like, okay, well, does he have staph in his blood? Well, where did that come from? Is he injecting IV drugs or something like that? Did he have gonorrhea? Well, we could test him for that and show it's negative. So there would be some pieces that would have not fit together and maintained a little bit of skepticism about the diagnosis of a septic arthritis, even with that joint space fluid. But yeah, good case.
Yeah, I actually know a guy who was doing self-injections with hyaluronic acid into his hip joints for pain relief and gave himself septic joint, which is a bad outcome, but also kind of like the cautionary tale. It's like, hey, maybe not injecting yourself directly with...
Terrible idea in general. Some joints like doing a knee joint injection, not terribly difficult, although I still wouldn't advise you doing it on yourself. Hip joint injections, a bit more difficult, and definitely wouldn't recommend doing it on yourself. There's a lot of high value real estate going right by your hip, including some blood vessels, some nerves, some other things that you would probably not want to injure if you have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So the take home here is that, look, hip pain, the majority of the time, especially in young, healthy, otherwise active people, look, overuse and trauma-related causes of hip pain, most common. We've got a lot of information on that, how to deal with pain, how to go about training and such. But if the story doesn't add up, oh, they just came out of nowhere, and the person's got a significant, severe decline in function, that probably deserves additional sort of evaluation. Now, I know that's not as clean as people want it to be. Like, look, across this, at this point, do not pass go, do not collect $200, go off to the hospital. But if the person is concerned due to the sort of time course and severity of symptoms, yeah, I think that's reasonable to say, you should be evaluated by a healthcare professional. And in the setting of a short term, so acute, atraumatic hip pain with severe functional limitations, with or without constitutional symptoms, so fever, nausea, malaise, feeling sick or whatever. Yeah, go see a healthcare professional. It's probably worth working up.
Agree. Yeah, good tips.
All right. So yeah, again, the case, the actual case is in the show notes below along with some other resources. But thank you so much for listening to the Barbell Medicine Podcast, where we bring modern medicine to strength and conditioning and strength and conditioning to modern medicine. I'm Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. Thank you to Dr. Austin Baraki for joining us here on The Mystery Case. And before you guys go anywhere, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps drive traffic to our podcast so we can keep bringing you all the latest nuance in health and fitness. From everyone here at Barbell Medicine, we'll catch you next week and every week right here on the Barbell Medicine Podcast. Hey everyone, Jordan here from Barbell Medicine. Now we'll get to the podcast here in just a moment, but I wanted to take a second to plug our Barbell Medicine Plus option in order to help support what we do here on the podcast and beyond. Now, if you hate these ads just as much as we do, you should know that Plus members get ad-free episodes as well as early access to our podcast, written episode summaries, videos, exclusive training information, access to a members-only podcast where Dr. Baraki and I answer your questions directly, and more exclusive content as well. If you want to support what we're doing here and become a Barbell Medicine Plus member, head over to barbellmedicine.com/plus and sign up to be a Plus member today. That's barbellmedicine.com/plus to help us out and get rid of these ads for good. Thanks for your support. Let's head to the podcast.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.